before we cut our cords, and streaming was years away. You could only binge on old DVDs, and seasons didn't last one day. But how did we cope? The weekly wait was such a tease. With the 2-hour block of shows, we could endure with ease. On every Thursday, could tune into NBC. Travel to Dundee, Mifflin, Greendale, TGS, San Pawnee. They stopped calling him a sea, but it was still a beautiful sight. So now I'm talking Comedy Night, and it's Podcasted Right.
Welcome to Comedy Night Podcasted Right. I am your podcast captain, Matt Cale. This isn't so much as a first episode, but it's too long to be a trailer. Putting this all together, I've felt a lot like Abed pulling together an origin story, and it's really a who, what, when, how, and why of my new show. Let's start out. Who am I? Well, my name's Matt. I'm 34. I live in New Brunswick, Canada, and I've been wanting to get into podcasting for years, and this is my first attempt. The only thing that's been holding me back from starting a show was, what the hell am I going to talk about? I'm not really qualified to talk about anything. What am I good at? Well, I'm pretty damn good at watching television. I've done a lot of it. Might even say I've been training for this my whole life. And then, one day, some inspiration struck me out of the blue. On February 29th, 2020, Reddit user Wileymon posted the following on our television subreddit. I often think about the fact that the 2009-2010 NBC Thursday night comedy lineup featured Community, Parks and Rec, The Office, and 30 Rock. This post now has 23,000 upvotes and 1,500 comments. It made the front page. Reading the comments, it seems like a lot of people felt the same way and fondly remembered these four shows. Other folks came into these shows much later, and the fact that they all aired at once was mind-blowing to them. Me? I'm in that first group. I distinctly remember watching all these shows at this time, and continued watching them until they ended, and they all still have an impact on me, on social media, and pop culture in general to this day. 2009-2010 was a bit of a strange time in my life, and in a massive understatement, everything since February of 2020, it was a strange time in literally everyone's life. You're going to groan, but one of my favorite movies is 2010's Inception. Judge me if you will, but hear me out. That Reddit post was a moment of inception for me. I was probably half asleep when I read it and just scrolling through the front page, and completely uninvited, this idea plopped into my head. And like DiCaprio says in Inception, once an idea has taken hold of the brain, it's almost impossible to eradicate. And this idea had taken hold. I'd started to do some research. I'm such a huge nerd, I pulled the episode lists off Wikipedia, threw them into an Excel spreadsheet, used some lookup formulas, built a table of when each show actually aired. Turns out it wasn't just 2009 to 2010. Even into 2012, all four shows aired new episodes on the same night. It happened roughly 34 times. There's a few sortas, and many cases where at least three of the four aired new episodes at once. And making this list, something jumped out immediately. In 2009, these four shows were at drastically different points in their runs. Community had just premiered, Parks and Rec was picking up steam in its second season, while The Office was in full swing in season 6, and 30 Rock was in its fourth. What really intrigued me is that all of these shows have now come and gone, but they still resonate with audiences today. Why do these four shows still leave such an indelible mark? NBC's 2-hour comedy block has lasted for over 30 years. But if you shift even 1 year in either direction, you don't get this phenomenon. This, I'll call it a tetramerate four really good shows of memorable television. I'm going to take some time today to go over this. The more I've dug, the more I've turned up, and I find it fascinating what we still consider to be worthy of rewatching and what we don't. Back in 2009, I had no idea the future relevance of what I was watching. As Andy Bernard would say, I wish there was a way to know you were in the good old days before you've actually left them. This was quite possibly the final hurrah of a television programming technique that had become the standard. What is it like to re-experience them in the way they were originally released? Four different shows, one night, week by week. So that's what I'm going to do. Each week, four episodes of four different shows, in a discussion and comparing and contrasting what happened. Don't call it a rewatch, but it is, sort of. I'm trying to find a different niche here than the other rewatch podcasts that are out there that you might enjoy. There's plenty of them, some starring the people who were actually there and give actual insight on what happened. I want this to be a different take. I'm going to play by some self-imposed rules. First, I want this to be inclusive to fans of each series, and I recognize that a lot of you probably haven't seen all four shows. I'm not going to deep dive into the minutiae of each episode, but I'm going to go over the broad strokes of the plot, look for interconnections and themes and jokes, or even actors and crew that appear across all the series. Second, no major spoilers. I'm not looking to ruin a series you haven't watched, so I'll avoid anything that could spoil your future experience. I just want to make this as enjoyable for fans of any of the four shows, and hopefully give you a new appreciation for any of these series that you may not have watched. And that's the gist. If you're binging the back catalog of podcasts, you've got the concept. You can just skip to the first episode now if you'd like. Or if you're like me and you're a podcast completionist and you have to listen to every minute of every episode, you're going to listen to this next part regardless. So I'll at least try to make it entertaining. Doing all this research and planning has led me down quite a few rabbit holes, and I've learned and uncovered some very interesting things, at least things that I find interesting, and I really wanted to get them out there. This is nothing like the future format of this podcast, but I don't really see any opportunities in the future to shoehorn these in, so, this is a little bit of a prequel, some bonus content before we even get started. The kind of stuff that other shows make you pay for on Patreon. So I've gone over the story a few times and I've realized I can only tell it backwards. And I'm going to start with right now. First and foremost, it's February of 2021 and the COVID-19 pandemic is ongoing. I am incredibly fortunate to live in a place where the spread has been very low. Only the last few months have seen any major outbreaks, and nowhere near as bad as it's been everywhere else. My wife and I have managed to stay continuously employed, so our only challenges have been mental ones. But we're doing well, all things considered. I expect you're probably listening to this at some point in the future, and the pandemic will likely be at some completely different level. We're saturated with all sorts of other media and constant reminders, and I just don't want to add to that. I'm keeping this podcast firmly grounded in the time these shows originally aired, so I'll be avoiding COVID-19 discussion as much as possible going forward. But these shows have enduring cultural relevance that have only increased in 2020, with the cast of Parks and Rec, Community, and 30 Rock all coming together for virtual reunions. You just can't talk about these shows' impact today without bringing up the pandemic. The next few minutes are going to be, hopefully, the one and done of me talking about COVID-19, and I plan on moving on. A lot of people have spent a lot of time binging new and old shows over the past year. Nowadays, most people just watch whatever's convenient. If a show's available on a streaming platform I'm already paying for, the barrier for entry is incredibly low, and I'm willing to give new things a try. lot of people do the same thing. With the recent proliferation of streaming services, viewership is hugely dependent on what we're paying for anyways. Community was added to Netflix back at the start of 2020, which really helped bring the show back to a bigger audience. I've owned the complete box set on DVD for quite a while now, but I've definitely found myself rewatching Community a lot more since it got added to Netflix, just by the sheer convenience. My Community habits are very similar to my Office habits, and that I'll just throw a random episode on from any point in the series and just keep watching. I've stopped keeping track of how many times I've watched both series, and it's a lot. In Canada, we have a bit of a double-edged sword when it comes to Netflix and The Office. Peacock never launched here, and there's no plans for it to ever come here. Considering how Netflix just acquired Parks and Rec at the beginning of February, it seems pretty unlikely at this point. Downside is, being something of a super fan, I'm a little jealous that I'm missing out on all this new content they're releasing on Peacock. So, my headspace on February 29th, 2020, when I read that Reddit post, is that The Office and Community are both almost an everyday part of my life. I started lining up which episodes aired when. I had a crystal clear image in my head of where those shows were at and their stories. But it got me thinking more about Parks and Rec and 30 Rock. 30 Rock was definitely the furthest from my mind. In retrospect, I don't think I'd ever rewatched the entire series since it ended. I loved it while it was on. I think maybe I never got the urge to rewatch because I've always felt like Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt had just been the spiritual sequel to 30 Rock. Tina Fey and Robert Carlock have brought the same real-life cartoon feel with all those rapid-fire jokes. Having that fresh material available lessened the longing to go back and watch 30 Rock again. I was a bit more familiar with Parks and Recreation, though. My wife had never watched the show with me while it was on the air, and after it was gone, she would often bring up how she wished she could watch it due to its continuous high reputation, but we couldn't stream it anywhere at the time. I very selfishly bought her the complete series on DVD for her birthday a few years back, and it was definitely one of those, this is definitely a gift for me too. But she didn't mind, and having access to the show meant I've seen it again at least a few times since it's ended. So ranking things, Community and The Office were completely fresh in my mind. Parks and Recreation was kind of there, but foggy. And 30 Rock was this fondly remembered, but quite honestly, mostly just in its legacy of modern day memes. So a few weeks later, heading into March of 2020, I'm beginning to form this idea of this podcast. There were definitely a lot bigger things going on in the world, but I had this extremely exciting spreadsheet of which episodes of which shows aired what nights sitting in front of me. And now it was just a matter of what I was going to do with it. But that mental block of 30 Rock was standing in my way. Could I just jump back into season 4 halfway through the show's run with no recent context? I barely could remember how the show ended, so I'd be flying really blind. And this was long before I had my plan to be spoiler-free, so that's really where the idea of this podcast stalled out. I was going to have to commit to a full 30 Rock rewatch, which is quite possibly the smallest problem anyone anywhere had in March of 2020. In the span of a few weeks, the sports and entertainment industries grinded to a halt. I found myself adjusting to working from home and just trying to make sense of the world as it was. My podcast idea slipped from my mind, but not for too long. That innocuous comment about 4 shows that aired in 2009 just would not go away. But that's because we all refused to let these shows go. Possibly because we had nothing else to do. But all 4 shows reclaimed a place in the spotlight. The Office's impending move to Peacock was still big news. And then between the Office Ladies podcast, news that Brian Baumgartner was preparing a separate podcast about the history of the show, John Krasinski's Some Good News web show, the release of Andy Green's book, and Leslie David Baker's Kickstarter about a Uncle Stan spinoff. Whatever happened with that? Anyways, The Office was probably being talked about just as much as it was when it was on the air. Most of this was actually pretty unrelated to the pandemic. We really just can't stop talking about The Office. But then Parks and Rec came back, literally, with the entire cast airing a virtual reunion, an entirely brand new episode. Back in April, I think this was just the thing we needed. I could only rewatch The Tiger King so many times. Desperate for entertainment, the Parks and Rec reunion special was a very bright spot. And everyone came back. Chris Pratt, a bona fide action star, a guy we last saw punching Thanos, was back playing Goofy Andy. It was a really fun distraction. And seeing everyone again, well, that pulled me into a Parks and Rec rewatch. That put 30 Rock on the back burner, and I spent most of the summer just every day watching one or two episodes of Parks and Recreation and remembering what I loved about it. Meanwhile, the cast of Community were enjoying the new spotlight that comes with being on Netflix. In February, Ken Jeong had guest starred on The Office Ladies podcast in their review of Email Surveillance, an early Office episode where Ken himself guest starred when he was just getting started in Hollywood. Joel McHale crashed the recording, and the two of them joked about how they should start a Community rewatch podcast, but they call it Community Enemies, and they just talk shit about each other. COVID-19 led to them following through. Kinda. They began the Darkest Timeline podcast, with Ken Jeong relying on his background of being an actual medical doctor before becoming an actor to give us up-to-date news on the virus, explaining all the stories that were in the news about proposed treatments, and sound advice on how to stay safe. And then, following in the footsteps of Park and Recreation, the entire cast of Community reunited virtually, although they took a different approach. Instead, they did a live table read performance of the episode Cooperative Polygraphy. Now, this is a cast that has all moved on to bigger and brighter things. And pandemic or not, getting Donald Glover back with the rest of the Community cast was an amazing sight to behold. And then, sure enough, the cast of 30 Rock reunited as well in the middle of the summer. I love to tell you about this special, but I only learned about it a few weeks ago because I completely missed it. From what I've pieced together, it was focused more on the launch of Peacock than anything pandemic-related. I quite possibly missed it entirely because most NBC affiliates refused to air it, since they aren't too pleased about Peacock in the first place. Considering how Peacock is going to stream all new NBC shows the day after they air on NBC, in a time and age when most people record shows and watch them later, giving people an excuse to cut out the affiliate stations altogether could very well become the death blow to broadcasting networks. And while I completely missed that controversy, I was very aware of the other big news story about 30 Rock. On June 22nd, a few weeks before that reunion special aired, Tina Fey announced that 4 episodes of 30 Rock would be removed from streaming services and syndication due to use of blackface. So having not yet rewatched 30 Rock, I couldn't even remember what they were talking about. I did finally do a rewatch last fall. I watched it via streaming services, so I didn't get a chance to see what was so controversial since it had already been removed. In the meantime, I've bought the DVDs just in case any of my streaming services drop 30 Rock before I get through this podcast. I haven't watched the now banned episodes yet, and I'm on the fence if I ever will. Tina Fey's statement mentioned intent. The intent, when pushing a boundary like this, is that mocking a stereotype can lessen its power. I think there's maybe a misguided belief that we used to have that turning these sort of things into jokes could help solve the issue. It's a bold strategy, Cotton, but it's clearly not working. And it's not just racist jokes. There's plenty of homophobia and transphobia as well that make going back and rewatching incredibly uncomfortable. At the very least, it's bringing up conversations about why we ever considered this acceptable and how we need to improve going forward. Last week, I was watching Parks and Rec Season 1 on DVD. And for those of you who have never bought physical media, DVDs have trailers, because if you've bought one show on DVD, they want more of your money and will advertise all the other shows you can buy on DVD. Season 1 DVD of Parks and Recreation has a trailer for 30 Rock's Season 3 DVD set. It's only a 90-second ad with highlights from a huge award-winning season. And a full 5 seconds of that trailer show Jane Krakowski in blackface dancing with absolutely no context whatsoever. You can't lay the blame on Tina Fey, Robert Carlock, or Jane Krakowski in this case. But this is indicative of the larger problem at play. Several people in that marketing department in 2009 thought one of the best ways to sell DVDs was showing a portrayal of blackface. It's deeply saddening when you think about it. So throughout the year, watching all these shows, watching under today's lens, has at times been a very uncomfortable experience. Another thing I found shocking, going back to my full Parks and Recreation rewatch, was that after I got to the finale, I rewatched that reunion special again. It was the thing that inspired me to watch the series again in the first place. Except now, it was the late summer, early fall. I can't remember exactly when, but it was only a few short months after it originally aired. It didn't take years for this to feel outdated. It only took months. The second wave of the pandemic was taking hold. Although in reality, did we ever clear the first wave? This was after a summer of anti-maskers, COVID deniers, and a clear division of people choosing to ignore or downplay the threat of the virus. Watching these lovable characters tell us to wash hands, stay at home, we'll get through this together, with such positivity, it just felt so hollow. It was like looking back and realizing just how short we fell trying to prevent the spread of COVID. I can't dwell on this even now. I deleted the special from my PVR. It'll be a long time before I ever think about rewatching it. And really, it's the same for most content that's been created over the past year. I don't think we'd ever imagine that things would have gotten as bad as they did. I'm not going to speculate on where we're going to end up, because I don't want to fall into that same trap. Don't get me wrong, I'm optimistic, but I just don't know. And it's painful to go back and relive all that anxiety and worry and fear again when we haven't come out on the other side yet. So, I realize this is supposed to be a fun podcast, and I've been a real bummer for the last 10 minutes, so I'm just going to bottle that all right back up and let's move on the show. But thanks for indulging me, because I've really had to get that off my chest. All right, let's completely change gears here, and let's go back to the start. Something else has only really dawned on me since I started prepping for this podcast. I've become really fascinated about how shows take on second lives long after they go off the air. And again, it goes back to a shift in how we engage with shows at the time. For years, and I mean since the dawn of television, we really had two metrics that defined whether a show was good. First, and I'll lump them both together, is the critical acclaim and winning awards. And second, viewership numbers. A parallel exists in all other media. You know, the highest grossing movie doesn't always win the Oscar, and the best-selling album doesn't win the Grammy. But whether it's awards and acclaim or just a bunch of people watching it, shows become successful either way. But we're talking about a time about the rise of social media, and that shifted perception on what was considered good, because viewership doesn't equal engagement. Just because a lot of people were watching something doesn't necessarily mean it was great. A show could have 15 million viewers, but it might be everyone's 15th favorite show. It wouldn't take much of a distraction to steal viewers away. And critical reception, well, critics are such a small subset of the population, and their tastes frequently change. But with social media, we really started to see how engaged fans were with their shows. And it helped connect fans together in ways that weren't possible before. It expanded that water cooler talk atmosphere. You weren't just limited to the few people in your physical social circle when you wanted to talk about your favorite show. You could connect with every single fan of the show everywhere. So at the time, these shows all had small fan bases, but they were passionate fan bases. And then, when you mix that in with the rise of streaming, we ended up having endless content and people to discuss it with at our fingertips. This was incredibly different than the status quo for decades leading up to this point. You see, sometimes good ratings, critical reception, and fan engagement all go hand in hand. And NBC already realized that placing many of their biggest shows on the same night could make them the top-rated television network. It started in the mid-80s, and they advertised it as the best night of television on television. Cosby Show, Family Ties, Cheers, Night Court, Hill Street Blues, L.A. Law. TV shows that would go on to influence generations afterwards. In the 90s, they called it what we were already calling it, must-see TV. Seinfeld, Mad About You, Friends, Frasier, ER, Will and Grace, Scrubs, The Apprentice, shows that dominated ratings well into the mid-2000s. Thursday was TV night, and you watched NBC. It eventually became something of an arms race. If another network show got popular, they would put it on Thursday night. Shows like Survivor, CSI, Big Bang Theory, Two and a Half Men, Grey's Anatomy, Dancing with the Stars, American Idol. It eventually started to work. NBC conditioned the populace to watch TV on Thursday nights, and the other networks eventually figured out how to build upon this mass appeal to the point where almost anything airing on Thursday night got massive ratings. Shows caught on because being in those marquee spots just gave you the feeling that it was important. It was must-see. And not every show was an all-time classic. Looking back to 1999, NBC's Thursday night lineup was Friends, Just Shoot Me, Seinfeld, Veronica's Closet, ER. Just Shoot Me and Veronica's Closet drew better ratings than The Office ever did. But you don't see any news articles about how we watched 57 billion minutes of Kirstie Alley on Netflix last year. Before we had the media sources that we do today, you'd often just watch what was on between your favorite shows. And that was often a good enough draw to keep you watching. It's inertia. Now, I've been addicted to television since I was a kid. But for a few brief years, namely 2004, when I'd started at university, I didn't really watch any shows. I had discovered this thing called file sharing. Don't tell Lars Ulrich. You know, that was this fascinating thing where you could, for no money at all, download basically any movie or song or show that had ever been made for free. Now, okay. I don't condone this now, and my guilt over those years is why I've bought so many DVDs and I pay for subscription services that I'll never be able to watch. But as a broke college student, it was the time of my life. Network TV didn't really have the appeal to me anymore now that I had the entire world at my fingertips. So I really wasn't paying attention when a little show called The Office premiered in the spring of 2005. But I knew who Steve Carell was, because I had watched Anchorman at least 10 times that year, and I loved when my sweet brick got a starring role in The 40-Year-Old Virgin that summer. I became aware of The Office sometime later that year. People in my dorm were watching it. I'd walk into their room, and there was Steve Carell on TV, but I didn't think too much of it. A friend of mine eventually showed me the full That's What She Said scene from Season 2 Sexual Harassment. And I was starting to understand the appeal. And the fact that Champ Kine, Dave Koechner, was also in that scene was just a good sign that this had to be a good show. My friend had done the hard part all and already downloaded every episode that had aired. And this was everything up to Michael's birthday. Downside was, how was I going to get my hands on it? It was like 5 or 6 gigabytes of data. Did they even make thumb drives that big back then? No. See, this is what we had to do. You'd go down to the pharmacy, and you buy a 10-pack of recordable CDs, which would cost like 10 bucks. You didn't splurge on the rewritable ones because I don't even think they sold them. That was way too damn expensive. And because you didn't buy the rewritable ones, if you messed up burning the CDs, that was a dollar you threw in the trash. So my buddy could fit about 3 episodes on each disc. And then you couldn't put it in your DVD player because it was a CD burner, not a DVD burner. So your only choice was to actually watch them on a computer. Even then, it was my wife who ended up watching The Office first. Okay, we weren't married at the time, but it's weird to refer to her as my girlfriend, so I'm just going to keep saying wife. She had to go to the hospital because she had strep throat, and while she was waiting in the waiting room, she took her laptop and she had these CDs with her. And again, being the year 2006, there was no such thing as free Wi-Fi anywhere. The only thing she could do was watch these CDs with this weird little show called The Office on it. She says now she watched it because she had literally no other option. By the time she got through that first CD, she was hooked. I think it was something around spontaneous dental hydroplosion that really sealed the deal for her. She quickly watched the rest of the series when she got back from the hospital and told me I had to watch this show. This being April 2006 meant it was final exam time, so I never really got the chance to watch the show until exams were over and I moved back home. I watched the entire series in a day on the family computer in my living room. I was hooked. This was so different than anything I'd ever seen before, and I loved it. My older sister, who was also home from university, watched a few of them with me, and she's remained a lifelong fan to this day as well. Now, at the time, I assumed season 2 just ended with Michael's birthday. Season 1 had ended with Hot Girl, which isn't much of a cliffhanger, and I just assumed season 2 just kind of ended the same way. For whatever reason, I wasn't home the night of the next new episode. Drug testing. Maybe I was out getting drunk with my paintball buddies. But then I had to hear my sister tell me about the latest episode. Dwight finds a joint and makes everyone get drug tested. And Michael's worried because he accidentally smoked pot in an Alicia Keys concert. Well, shit, that sounds hilarious. That weekend, I actually ended up moving out of my parents' house. And it didn't take me long to download drug testing once I got settled. And then I was smart enough to make sure that I watched the last 2 episodes live as they aired. But while my sister was telling me about watching The Office, she brought up the show that was on right before it, My Name is Earl. She said it was really funny too. I had heard of it. NBC had put some serious advertising money behind it, so ads were popping up everywhere. And it had a lot more viewers than The Office. So when I watched the last few episodes of The Office that year, I decided to check out My Name is Earl. Even though it was the end of season 1, the plot was pretty easy to pick up. The opening credits of the show are the titular character, Earl, explaining the entire premise. He had been a dick his entire life, one day hit the jackpot on a scratch lotto ticket, and then lost all his money because he got hit by a car. While recovering in the hospital, he learns about the concept of karma, makes a list of everything he's ever done wrong, and pledges to fix all his mistakes. My name is Earl. It was funny enough to hook me in. Didn't take me long to download the entire first season to catch up on what I had missed. And by the next fall, I was watching both shows every week. I'm starting to see ads for the rest of NBC's lineup. Scrubs, this new show called 30 Rock, and ER. Full disclosure, I completely missed the boat on Scrubs. I think I was just too young to understand it when it started. I'd watched some of it in high school, and it just didn't appeal to me. And by this point, with it being 5 or 6 seasons in, I wasn't going to start watching it now. And ER? Well, honestly, my mom watched ER. A lot of the cast had changed since I was in high school and watched it with her, so it just didn't really appeal to me anymore. So whatever this 30 Rock was, I wasn't interested. By the next year, though, things started to change. NBC shuffled their schedule around and put 30 Rock on in between My Name is Earl and The Office. Now it actually took a bit of effort to ignore 30 Rock. And all of a sudden, it was winning all these awards. And then they were advertising that Jerry Seinfeld was returning to NBC to be on the season premiere. NBC was going all in on 30 Rock. I resisted, but then a few more factors came into play. Namely, My Name is Earl took a steep dip in quality that year. Earl ends up in jail, And the first half of that third season was a huge departure from the first two seasons. The Office, meanwhile, was starting to become more and more popular. The viewership had swung firmly in The Office's favor. After 3 years of will they, won't they, Jim and Pam were finally dating. Ryan the temp was now Michael's boss. It was a whole new world. And then the Writers Guild of America strike happened. Most shows had enough scripts ready that they could cover until at least Christmas or beyond. But Steve Carell, in an act of solidarity, refused to cross picket lines. Within a week and a half of the strike beginning, The Office aired The Deposition and then went radio silent. Now, My Name is Earl continued on for several more weeks, and between losing The Office and that constant barrage of advertising, 30 Rock was looking more and more appealing. So, in what I swear is the last time I'm going to encourage internet piracy, I downloaded the first season and what I'd missed so far of the second. Much like The Office, I binged the episodes in a day or two, to the point I was able to catch up with the live episodes, and I never stopped watching after that. So by this point, must-see TV had morphed into Comedy Night Done Right. Oh my god, that's the name of this podcast. Yeah, that's how they were rebranding it. Unfortunately, though, the writer's strike didn't resolve until the following spring, and it was April before we got any new shows. That strike had long-lasting repercussions. Scrubs ended up getting canceled at the end of that season. Although ABC picked it up and gave it two more seasons, which I'll bet is my only source of information on how well those went. And while The Office and 30 Rock came back strong, My Name is Earl never really found its footing again. And to think, My Name is Earl had been critically acclaimed and once had the highest viewership. And while it was a good show, I don't think it resonated with audiences the same way that 30 Rock or The Office did. And when the quality began to dip, people started finding reasons to tune out. The following season, NBC replaced Scrubs with Kath and Kim, a short-lived remake of a popular Australian series. I watched a few episodes, again, just the halo effect of it being on air, but I eventually ignored it. It came to an end after 17 episodes and went off the air in March. ER, meanwhile, also came to an end, much more ceremoniously, after 15 years of being the tentpole show on NBC's Thursday night. And it went off the air with a huge three-hour special. The following week was the beginning of a new era. Two shows premiered that night. A cop drama, Southland, took over ER's old-time slot. And replacing the canceled Kath and Kim was this little show called Parks and Recreation. It had a whole lot of promise. It was created by The Office's Greg Daniels and Michael Schur. Many Office fans knew they were originally developing an Office spinoff before coming up with this show instead. It was a mockumentary. The second lead on the show was Rashida Jones, who, regardless of your feelings about Karen Filippelli, she had played a huge role in the amazing third season of The Office. But that first season of Parks and Recreation was just kind of there. It was an improvement over Kath and Kim. I did watch the entire first season, but it had a huge barrier to climb that it was being compared to The Office. It's hard to say, but if it wasn't for everything else that was going on around it, who knows how easy it would have been for NBC to have canceled the show instead of giving it a second season. Because a few weeks later, My Name is Earl finished its fourth season. They ditched those terrible plots from season three and went back to the basics of Earl working on his list. But it was losing viewers, and even though season four ended on this massive cliffhanger, the show was canceled the next day. Unlike Scrubs, another network didn't swoop in to save it. You know, there was that typical discussion of maybe they'll do a movie or a special or something, but that all dried up pretty quickly. And then that was the end of My Name is Earl. Did you even remember the show before I started talking about it? You don't see it on streaming. It's barely in syndication anymore. But 15 years ago, it aired alongside The Office and 30 Rock, beat them in ratings, and nowadays it's completely forgotten. And I can't help but think, why? Well, the cast never really got any more famous than when it aired. Nobody's won any Oscars or starred in any superhero franchise movies or become one of the biggest hip-hop stars in America. And the lack of accessibility doesn't help either. I can remember being on Netflix a long time ago, but not for very long. And I think, most importantly, a lot of people liked it, but it just didn't generate the same fan response these other shows did. And when the chips were down, it just wasn't something worth fighting for. But that doesn't mean I wasn't butthurt over it in 2009. And that catches us up to the infamous 2009-2010 television season. Perhaps because options were limited, and the network had faith in Greg Daniels and being able to turn a show around in its second season, Parks and Rec got renewed. And we'll get into it, but it started to get really good. The Office and 30 Rock, well, thinking back to my feelings at the time, were probably starting to decline, but they were also still excellent shows. The ER time slot was a hot mess. This was a time when NBC experimented with the Jay Leno show after Jay had retired or possibly was fired from The Tonight Show. Okay, quite honestly, the Jay Leno show is only memorable because he just so happened to have Kanye West booked as his musical guest on his first episode. And the night before, Kanye West took offense to Taylor Swift, winning Best Female Video over Beyoncé at the MTV Music Awards. It's the famous, "I'ma let you finish" speech. Jay Leno could not have been luckier. 18 million people watched Jay Leno as Kanye West, what his dead mother would have thought about his actions. The whole thing was, by 2009 standards, insane. But that was Monday night, and we're talking Thursdays. And after season 6 of The Office premiered, and before Jay Leno, this little show premiered with little to no fanfare. The cast was semi-recognizable, but far and away, the biggest name on there was Chevy Chase. But Community hooked me right away. I watched that pilot a lot, and even several times just in the past few weeks. And I can remember feeling something special while watching it. I've actually rewatched all 4 pilots recently, but it's only the Community pilot that I remember how I felt when I watched it. It felt smart. I love the references to John Hughes and Breakfast Club. It felt like it was going to be a hit, and as the weeks went on, it just kept getting better. And that's why I'm so excited to do this podcast and relive those times. I keep going back to why that Reddit post resonated so deeply with me. It's just brought me back to that time in my life. I said earlier it was a strange year. My wife and I had recently moved. I had graduated from university the year earlier in 2008. Found a job around 30 minutes away from the college town we lived in, and my wife graduated in 2009. She ended up continuing on, getting an education degree in the same city that I worked in, so it was only natural that we got an apartment in that city. We had spent 5 years in that college town and made a lot of good friends, and especially in that last year, we spent a lot of time with the small group of people that we're still very close friends with to this day. But once we moved, our social lives collapsed. That small college town had 5 bars within walking distance. We knew enough people that there was always some place to go and something to do. Not that we moved to a big city, but the dynamic completely changed. I just kept working, and it was dawning on me that having a job was going to be the same thing day in, day out for the rest of my life. By June of 2010, we ended up buying a house and quickly embarked on a new chapter in our lives. Keeping up a house demands a lot more of your time than living in an apartment does. We only lived in that apartment for 15 months, but looking back, it felt like 15 years. With no friends and nothing to do, I turned to television. I can still picture it vividly. It was a 27-inch tube TV on a cheap little stand in the corner, next to the sliding patio doors that led out to the backyard that we shared with the entire apartment building. The old blue couch and the shitty Walmart coffee table. There wasn't a whole lot to get excited about in those days, but at least I had TV. And, you know, let's not get too heavy-handed here. I can appreciate the irony that I've spent a year getting ready to make this show, and it's been another year that's felt like 15. But here we are, and now with all that off my chest, I'm ready to get started. New episodes will come out bi-weekly. I think I'll have to release them on Thursdays just to make it feel right. And once I'm more comfortable, I'll see if I can turn episodes around weekly instead, but I really want to enjoy this experience. I've only got a limited amount of data points to pick from. May 10th, 2012 was the last time all four shows aired on the same night. So there's not a whole lot of ground to cover. If you've listened this long, I want to thank you for your time. I hope you've gotten to know me a bit better and know where I'm coming from going into this show. I want to get to know you better too. So feel free to reach out to me via email at comedynightpodcastedright@gmail.com. Also, I've been pretty adverse to social media over all of these years, despite how much I praised it earlier. But I set up some accounts for some shameless self-promotion. And to go back to 2009 and those days in that apartment, I can remember one day debating whether or not I should get Twitter. But then I stopped myself and thought, what the hell am I going to tweet about? Drank a Corona and watched The Princess Bride today. I'd like to think I'm slightly more interesting now, so hopefully I'll have better things to say. So you can find me on Twitter at ComedyNightPod1 and also on Instagram at ComedyNightPodcastedRight. Am I even saying that right? On Instagram at, whatever, you'll find me. So next time, we'll get down to business. We're going way back to October 15th, 2009. We'll be looking at Community's Advanced Criminal Law, Park and Recreation's Sister City, The Office's Mafia, and the Season 4 30 Rock premiere, aptly titled Season 4. This has been Comedy Night Podcasted Right, hosted by me, Matt Kale. The theme song and music are all me. The recording, editing, producing, all me. I design the logo and I run the social media pages. Me. If this turns out to be terrible, I have no one to blame but myself. Or Creed. Quality assurance. Your job. I really think you screwed the pooch on this one, Creed. Because of you, this entire company is in jeopardy.
Every week I'm supposed to take 4 hours and do a quality spot check at the paper mill. And of course, the 1 year I blow it off, this happens.